Its current state here on WKAR, for farmers across Michigan and the country, pollination is essential for making their crops grow. For years now, growers have kept a closer eye on a key pollinator, bees, mainly because their numbers have been declining. Our next guest has spent close to 4 years focusing on alternative pollination strategies, mainly involving wild bees. Rufus Isaacs is a professor of entomology here at Michigan State University, and I believe this is your third visit to Current State, so welcome back.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning.
Let's start with some context out there for 2016 right now. Generally, how challenged are American growers as far as pollinators go?
Well, I think it depends on the grower. If you're a grower of crops that need pollination and you rent honeybees, perhaps, then you're certainly concerned about it. I think most growers in Michigan have been able to get enough honeybee colonies, and Michigan beekeepers have been able to supply them with what they need. But at the national scale, there's concern because the overall number of honeybee colonies has declined and the need for pollination is going up, with people planting more and more blueberries, apples, cherries, almonds.
Geographically, how does this break down? Where is the United States most challenged geographically?
So we've looked at this in a recent analysis across the country and have found certain areas of the country where it's much more of an issue for wild bees. That study was more looking at the other pollinators, the many other species that provide pollination. And we found areas of California in the Central Valley and also areas of the Midwest where land use is much more intense. As you might expect, those are areas where wild bee populations have a harder time persisting. And so you'd expect that farms in those areas would have a harder time getting natural pollination and would be more dependent on managed pollinators such as honeybees.
How are we doing generally here in the Midwest?
I think in the Midwest, we have a very active beekeeping community here in Michigan, and they do a great job of providing pollination service to this industry. But we do have springs where we get cool weather when the blueberries, apples, and cherries are in bloom, and then it's tough for the honeybees to be active enough to pollinate them. So we've also seen declines in wild bees in the Midwest. There's been some studies looking at bumblebees in particular, and they're a pollinator that many people recognize and love. And there have been some particularly dramatic declines in some bumblebee species. And there's a certain species, the rusty patch bumblebee, that we haven't seen in Michigan since the 80s.
Is it important to keep wild bees part of the landscape? Is it arguable that you can become too dependent on managed honeybee colonies, for example?
Well, I think growers who have very intensive farms, large areas, they are quite dependent on honeybees because there's a lower wild bee population there. But there is a benefit of diversifying where you have both. You can go back to that situation I described earlier where the honeybees might not be so active in the early spring when it's cool. In those conditions, we have native bees that are adapted to our conditions and they can fly when the weather is cool. And so that combined strategy, diversifying by combining honeybees with these wild bees, that's part of what we've been looking at in this project to look at how beneficial that can be to mix your bees.
Now, you alluded to fruit crops here earlier. Are we more in need of bees in Michigan because of the fruit we grow in this state?
That's right, yeah. We have a large and diverse fruit and vegetable industry here. We mustn't forget the Michigan's number one for pickling cucumbers, and they need honeybees and other bees to visit those flowers. And we also have, as many people know, the large fruit crop acres as well. And so, yes, that makes us more dependent. So in the springtime, when the weather starts to warm up, we get thousands of colonies of honeybees that come up from their overwintering conditions down in Florida, Georgia, and Texas, and come up into Michigan to pollinate those crops. So there are migratory beekeepers bringing colonies as well as the colonies that stay here through the winter in Michigan.
We will get to the particulars of some of your recent work here in just a moment here. We're talking with Rufus Isaacs, an entomologist here at Michigan State University. Rufus has been studying pollination options for growers involving both wild bees and human-managed honeybees as well. Talk to us again here. 2016, where do we stand? People have been hearing for years that the bee population has been going down. What do we know about the factors that have led to that drop in bee populations?
Yeah, so first of all, it's worth mentioning that there have been surveys done by the USDA and other organizations that they support, and there has been a little bit of an increase in the number of honeybee colonies compared to the long-term trend of decline. So that's encouraging. It's not a big increase, but it's at least showing that the decline might have slowed. And then in terms of factors, the three most important that are I think, well understood as key factors driving bee decline are habitat loss, pesticide, and also the pathogens, the diseases and the parasites that affect bees. So depending on the bee, one or more of those might be more important, but the interaction between those seems to be what a lot of people are suggesting is what's driving this. So you might imagine a bee that's in a landscape that doesn't have too many flowers to visit might mm-hmm. be more susceptible to the stress of diseases it might pick up or pesticides it might be exposed to, and vice versa. Those factors are all interacting to weaken bees.
The phrase colony collapse disorder came into circulation here a few years back. Is that still an issue?
I think colony collapse disorder really focused people's attention on what was going on with the concerns with bees. But now we see more of a focus on bee health broadly. Yes, there are colonies that show those symptoms, but that's a very specific set of symptoms. And there are broader issues going on with bee health. So, yeah, I think colony collapse is something that people are concerned about. But we've now turned attention, I think, to bee nutrition, bee disease control. There are mites that are affecting honeybees that are causing beekeepers a lot of headaches. So the broad suite of practices that need to be used to keep bees healthy is what is being focused on there.
Well, overall then, though, is the United States still on a worrisome trajectory here regarding bee populations?
Well, there's certainly national concern about this. I don't think people have stopped being concerned. It's definitely something that's received national attention now. We have a White House memorandum that was released by the government a year or more ago, and that's driven now a lot of investment that's coming to research and extension and education about bee health issues. So I actually see more activity now around the country on pollinator issues. There's a conference coming up in 2 weeks that we're going to in Pennsylvania, and 500 people are coming together to talk about issues affecting bees. So I think the concern is still there. There's signs for optimism, though. I think people are seeing that there's attention to this issue, and also more planting habitat for pollinators, more attention to pesticide issues, more attention to disease management.
How do we beef that wild bee population up, though?
Well, wild bees don't have beekeepers the same way that a honeybee does. So the key to that is creating places for them to persist. And they need two key things. They need a place to nest, and they need flowers to visit to get their pollen and nectar, which is the protein and the carbohydrate that they need. So there's a national target of creating 7 million acres of habitat for pollinators, and part of that memorandum that I mentioned just now from the federal government is targeting that goal. We're trying to do our part for that in Michigan, and there's a lot of agencies coupled, partnering with MSU and other groups around the state to try and increase pollinator habitat out in farmland and in natural areas, and all of those efforts, we hope, will build the capacity of Michigan and other states to support wild bees.
I take it you're wrapping up, or you're approaching, at the very least, approaching the conclusion of a four-year or so work involving these alternative pollinator strategies. Talk to us a little bit more about some of the things that you found.
Okay, yeah. So this has been a national project, and I'd like to focus in a little bit today on talking about one of the Michigan examples, where we've been able to go into almost 20 Michigan blueberry farms and look at how important honeybees and wild bees are in those settings, and what kind of benefit the growers are getting from those pollinators. So in these larger commercial farms, we find that honeybees are the dominant pollinator. These colonies are brought there by the grower in the spring, or contracted by the grower with the beekeeper to get them there in the spring. Mm-hmm. And here we found that naturally pollination of blueberry is quite good. We do find wild bees in those fields. We find more of them in farms where there's more wild area nearby. So if a grower has either a woodland next to the farm, or they have a little patch of one of these pollinator plantings that may have been put in there, then they get more wild bees, and that translates then into greater yield at harvest time. So this time of the year, when people are in the store buying their blueberries or their cherries, think about the bees that were doing that work back in the spring.
So it sounds like there's a land use dynamic that's in play here as well. Are you advocating more wild spaces? You alluded to the creation of more habitat.
So we've seen benefit of that in terms of greater yield and also greater profit for the farmer in the blueberry studies that we've done. We do see a great benefit of that for bees. There's also some benefits for natural enemies that attack pest insects. And also, you can think about associated benefits for nutrient runoff and other aspects that habitat may create in farms. The federal government now is supporting these programs by investing in programs here in Michigan that, through the Natural Resource Conservation Service, farmers can sign up for this. And there are some requirements that you have to, some hoops that you have to jump through to do it. But a lot of the cost of this can be borne by others other than the grower at the beginning to get this set up. So that can be a program that could then help meet these goals of greater habitat around the state and support the national goals.
Rufus Isaacs is an entomologist here at Michigan State University. He's been studying pollination options for growers involving both wild bees and human-managed honeybees. It sounds as if the honeybee business might not be a bad business to get into here in recent years.
Well, it's been challenging. I think there's been a lot of challenges for beekeepers, but there is certainly demand, and a beekeeper who rents their colony here in Michigan to a grower could get a certain amount of money for that, but it could be three or four times that if they go to pollinate almonds in California. So there's definitely a supply and demand here, and as the demand goes up, the rental costs go up as well. Mm. So we even see Michigan beekeepers taking their colonies to California to support that important industry out there.
I know there are various pollinator initiatives. There is the Michigan Pollinator Initiative, and MSU is part of a pollinator protection plan. Talk to us a little bit about those.
So the first of those, the Michigan Pollinator Initiative, is an effort by MSU funded through the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources to just bring together the people at MSU that are already working on pollinators. We have a number of faculty around campus, and then their staff in their labs, students and postdocs. And so we've been meeting regularly and trying to think about how we can bring together the expertise of MSU to help the various issues related to pollination. So it's bees, but it's also monarch butterflies, thinking broadly about pollinator issues here in the state. So that just has been going for just over a year, and doing a lot of good work for beekeepers and other groups interested in pollination. And then that managed pollinator protection plan that you mentioned is an effort at the state level to tie into a national program to improve the health of pollinators in general, but honeybees specifically, by addressing some of the risks that they face when they're out in agricultural landscapes or other landscapes. So we're bringing together there the Department of Agriculture, Michigan State University, Farm Bureau. There's some other groups involved that are meeting regularly and putting that together. We had one big meeting in the spring where 50 stakeholders came together and discussed their issues and challenges and what they'd like to see in this plan. And then there's listening sessions through the summer and fall, and we expect to have the actual plan together by the first of the year next year.
Just a very important reminder to the extent to which we depend on bees and other pollinators, wild and otherwise. We want to thank our guest, Rufus Isaacs, an entomologist here at Michigan State University. He has been focusing on pollination options for growers involving both wild bees and human-managed honeybees. Rufus, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.